Hey, welcome everyone. It's We Watch Stuff 156. I'm Jeremy. Joining me, as always, is Shahid. What's going on, man?
Nothing much. It's just stuff. Been a tiring week, so.
No kidding. I probably should have brought this up off air, but yeah, nothing like being woken up to the sound of cracking wood, and you're like, "What's that?" And you kind of ignore it, and then 45 minutes later, your bed breaks.
Wow, you freaky man.
Well, I wasn't going to say so, but yeah. some little lady was taking quite a pounding this morning, apparently, and the bed said, "I give up." So we are in the market for a new bed. It's unfixable, so that's fine. It was from the first marriage anyways, so you know. If there's an apropos way of getting rid of bad memories.
She didn't make you burn that bed?
We actually, in all seriousness, we considered selling all of our furniture when I moved to Charlotte. Uh-huh. Everything. And then we just thought, that's a bad idea. Because you're not going to get enough money to buy new stuff. I mean, you got some, of course. But, you know, not enough to buy everything you need again. So, yep. Yeah, so. Anyways, yeah, so kind of a, slow week. We were talking about stuff. One thing. Are you caught up on the Mae Young Classic?
Yes, I am.
All right. So what do you think of this first round? I know we didn't talk about this originally, but. And yes, I guess it's going to be the inevitable comparison between this year and last year, but what are you thinking of this year so far?
One, it seems like the talent level is higher. Because, and mostly because it's like they brought in like the best of the best from Japan. And it's kind of like, you know, last year it was all tough, like Kairi Sane, and then all these new women like you didn't really know, some from the indies that you kind of knew, like, you know, Mercedes Martinez, but it was like basically new names. This one is like, you know, they seem like they took a lot of the best from last year, people that they already have in NXT, and then it's like, let's get a bunch of ringers. Because you even, you know, you got Io Shirai, who's better than, like, Kairi Sane. So that's to tell you how good she is. You have, what's the girl, Mako Satomura, the one that was, like, yes, in WCW Nitro, like, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And then you got this other one, I can't remember her name. They label her as, like, you know, Godzilla. Uh-huh. And seeing her just drop people on her damn neck. Like, you basically, like, it's kind of like, you know, you have that situation, more stories. I think the biggest difference is the commentary is a lot better.
Yes.
From last year.
Definite standout.
Like, you know, like, it's just night and day. Like, Michael Cole, without Vince McMahon's ear, gets to be, like, you know, Michael Cole, wrestling journalist. Like, he tells good stories. He talks about the background of the wrestlers. I'm still amazed, like, they talk about height and weight and how that comes in difference. You know, like, such and such will have a 100-pound difference, or, like, you know, they have 6 inches of height so they can use that, you know, for leverage and stuff. It's like, they're talking about, like, a real sport. You're not used to Michael Cole talking that way if you just watch him on Raw.
Yeah, you're not used to that period, really, now with WWE. I mean, that's hometown. Remember when hometowns were a big problem? They didn't want to say, like, people were from such and such Canada because they're a good guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, huh?
I mean, they've kind of eased up on that now. Like, they'll acknowledge it's somebody from the hometown. Like, I forgot last week was from Denver till they was in Colorado and the crowd was going wild. Oh, that's right. He is from there. Like, that's the first time it sunk in that, you know, he was from, like, I knew he was from, because they always announced he's from Colorado Springs, but it never seemed like a big deal because he wasn't really on Raw when they were in Colorado till this week. But anyway, like, the Mae Young Classic, like, I've definitely enjoyed it. It's been some hard-hitting matches.
Yes.
Like, some real hard-hitting matches. And you can kind of tell who the crowd's getting behind. Like, Mia Yim seems to be, like, that crowd favorite. Because it's like, they like her story. She does have a good look. She did get signed to NXT.
I know one of the people in the final, but I have that was on accident, so I'm trying to forget. Uh-huh. But it was also kind of obvious it would be. But I would have gone into this whole first round not knowing anything. So when Mia Yim beat Allison Kay, I was pissed. Not in like a, oh, this is stupid sort of way, but in a fan sort of way, because I really like Sienna and Allison Kay. And never mind, she's from Detroit, but just she's a big badass woman. So when she lost, I was at my desk at work, and I just pounded my fist on the desk like, fuck this. And
then it worked.
No, and that's kind of where I'm going. Like,
yeah,
there's no overwhelming, you know, like, it wasn't snark. It was, well, my girl lost, or my woman lost, whatever. And that's bullshit. So it's been kind of refreshing. The one girl I really hate, and also Kevin's wife hates her too, the girl from American Ninja Warrior.
Oh, Katie Catanzaro.
Ugh, hate her. And again, that's a fan thing. She comes out all plucky and shit. I'm like, this bitch better lose.
She's, what, 95 pounds or something like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Look at y'all. Y'all big ass, I'm not surprised, bunch of big ass bullies. Y'all hate those fucky underdog type things.
Wait, but you're the guy that hates underdogs. You're the guy that always likes excellence. So don't give me this.
I do like excellence.
Don't pin this on me.
But here's the thing. I don't recognize her as, like, you know, she's being small, but keep in mind, was that first woman to complete the American Ninja Warrior trial? How much of an underdog is she? Is she the first person to do that?
Well, the one thing they did say, which was kind of stupid, they said that she doesn't have a lot of wrestling experience, that she's only had 2 matches or something. They said it was a very low amount, and I'm going, oh, okay, so she's obviously going to lose then. So maybe it was just, like, me tricking myself. So mm-hmm. when she won, I'm like, wait a second. And, oh, the line was, I believe the line was, maybe she can use her ninja training for this. And I went, she can pull out a sword or something? Like, what are you talking about? And then Kevin filled me in that she won the Ninja Warrior thing. I went, oh, okay. But
you so that makes you go throw like a ninja star out to just open the eyes.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. It's like it's been definitely interesting seeing the stories they told. Some of the memes they talk about, like, Io Shirai, like, I don't know anything about her, but it's real balls at WWE to sign a murderer because she was beating the shit out there. Yes. And it's funny when that moonsault, people was like, oh, that's like Lita, and I'm like, that girl was in the middle of the ring. Like, it wasn't like a Lita one where it's like Lita just didn't get any air or any distance. It's like, yeah, she didn't get a lot of height because she had to go hit somebody square in the middle of the ring with a moonsault.
I thought that looked a little more vicious than usual. Because the moonsault's kind of vicious anyways because you're landing. Mm-hmm. But she came down and then her legs are what caught her. And, like, so that's almost like an extreme axe kick, a double-legged axe kick off the top rope, essentially. And it was like, oof. So.
Yeah, and when I looked at it, like, it didn't look like a botch. It looked like she just did that on purpose.
Right, right.
Her whole style was like, who smiles when puts them on a crossface?
They did cover that up, too. That, well.
Oh, I'm saying, oh, she's enjoying herself inflicting pain.
Well, yeah, I heard. That's so, it's just.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
Okay, so I'm hitting it anyways. So
yeah, I'm just pushing right through it. Because even he who should not be named didn't smile when he did his move. So, yeah.
Oh, man. But I don't think it's too soon anymore, so that's all right. Anyways, I've been enjoying it. The athleticism, They're really beating home this, like, strides women have made, and I understand why they're doing it. At a certain point, they gotta stop and just let what's in the ring speak for itself.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say it's definitely noticeable when you see Caitlyn wrestle, and then you see some of these new girls wrestle, and it's like,
yeah,
it's a difference. Not even like, you know, she was never like, you know, an in-ring thing anyway. She wrestles a more power style, but like her style is more deliberate, like, you know, how they wrestle 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then you see somebody like Toni Storm, and it's like, this is how they wrestle now. And it's just different. It's not like a better or worse thing. It's just real. It's just real noticeable, like, you know. And I've made the joke, and it's kind of like, if the younger women, like if a Kelly Kelly had an NXT, she looked different, but like Kelly Kelly style would not fly in like today's thing. And that's not Kelly Kelly's fault. That's just how much rust has changed in like 4 or 5 years, where you got these, you know, because the talent base is just widened. It's not just, you know, indie wrestlers. It's not just models, gymnasts, power lifters, track people. Like, it's a generation of young women now who are looking at like wrestling as a viable career. Not just I fell ass backwards into it, like, I can do this. And all you gotta do is watch the Mae Young class. Like, you know, they got a lot of fun. Oh, she's 19, she's 20, 21, she's 22. Like, Toni Storm's only 22. Like,
that was very surprising when they said that.
Yeah, like, they have a lot of, cause, and then you think about, like, people like Paige. It's not just her that started wrestling when she was a teenager. Like, you got a lot of these people. I've been wrestling since I was 16 and 17. And then you combine that with, I got the best wrestlers in Japan, and I'm giving them a chance. Not like they hadn't done that since the Jumping Bomb Angels.
Yes.
And, or like Bull Nakano when she was wrestling Medusa in WWE. Like, it's been a long time where it was like, you know, we're getting the best from the best wherever. Like, I'm the first wrestler from Chile. I'm the first woman wrestler from Portugal. Like, it's like Street Fighter 2 with women.
Yeah. And one, you know, one marked difference, and it's kind of, I don't know, it's sexist. I don't know if this is or not. But you've got some really different types of women, but seemingly all of them are unreasonably attractive still. Like, it's still wrestling, but they're all athletic as hell, and then, yeah, there's a bunch of lookers in there. Like, this is like a dream come true.
Yeah. I know, like, imagine you see something like Reyna Gonzalez, who's bigger than China, but looks the way she looks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I didn't even realize she's that big. They're like, oh, you know, she's 6'2", 200 pounds. I'm like, that's big. And she doesn't look like she, you could tell she was big because she's wrestling somebody smaller than her, but she didn't necessarily, like, look like a monster, quote unquote. Like, yeah. You know, they, like, and it's kind of weird. You see these athletic women that look like models and they can do moonsaults. And it's not, and before it used to be a one or the other, like, you could be a great wrestler or you could look pretty. It was like the rule, kind of like, you normally didn't have both because the stereotype was, you know, pretty girls can't wrestle and girls that wrestle aren't pretty. And now it's like, you can look however you want, you look and just do what you want. And it kind of throws the perspective off, to like, how you gonna compete with something like that? Like, I use a perfect example. Tainara Conchi from Brazil. She looks like an anime character. Like,
yes.
Like, she looks like somebody drew her. And she's a black, and she walk around young, a black belt in judo that looks like a model. Like, that seemed like, that's some if someone put that in a comic book, they're like, okay, that's some male fantasy. This is unrealistic. We need to keep this stuff grounded. And WWE is like, no, we don't.
Yeah. And I'm sure there are people out there that are going to have a problem with it. Yeah, obviously, because Evolution's coming up a couple weeks, a month, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I know when they announced it to begin with, people were already going blah, 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 blah. But when as it gets closer, it's probably going to get louder again. But at the same time, and it's the whole thing, this is like a dream come true. I mean, you're just talking about, you know, like, anime characters or video game characters coming to life, and it's like, well, yeah. I mean, that's why they made them look that way in the first place. So, yeah, this is great, and I know this is the dead horse sort of stuff, but they just treat it straight up, no dumb storylines, no goofy ass finishes, none of that stuff, and it's just good.
Yeah,
and it goes by fast too. Although the main event, all right, there's two things that three that we kind of get away. They've done this twice now. One was Cedric Alexander's, I think it was his wife, no, was it wife or girlfriend? She was in it, and she lost while he's watching. Yeah, they did this three times. Rachel Evers lost, that's Cassius Ohno's girlfriend. He's in the crowd, she loses. And then
Robbie Brookside watching his daughter get demolished.
And they made it a point of saying that was the first match he's ever watched live. Like, what are you doing?
Look, Rocky ended with Rocky losing. I know it's kind of like, you know, dreams like that. It's like, it's realistic because it's like, it's no shame in her losing to who she lost to.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, normally you would see that, oh, this is the first match she saw, and he's so proud. And then he watched his daughter get the crap beat out of her. And it's like, if we both watch Cobra Kai, and it's like, that's how that last episode, it's like, oh, you see him there, he reconciling boyhood dream, yada, 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 and he get the shit beat out of him by the villain. And that's like, you normally don't see. In real life, stuff like that happens. I know storyline is like, you wouldn't think of that being a storyline, but they wrestle who they wrestle. I was surprised Rachel Evers lost again, because she lost the first round last year.
Doesn't she seem like a perfect, like the perfect specimen, to use Gorilla Monsoon's terminology? Like, she's like the perfect woman for what they look for. She's gorgeous, she can wrestle. Like,
I think it's kind of like, maybe they just want to be sure, because I know a lot of people, we said the same thing about Tessa Blanchard, and it's the reason why she's in TNA and not in WWE, and talent has nothing to do with it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, like, apparently it was like some personal stuff going on, like, she was in a shouting matches at tapings.
Oh, I thought you meant like her relationship with Ricochet.
Oh, yeah.
Performer, I guess.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, like she's with somebody else now. He's doing what he's doing. So, yeah, it's like, and the whole thing is, they'll be there. And there's no rush. Like, Deonna Purrazzo was the same thing. Like, people wonder why she hadn't been signed yet, and now she's signed. It's kind of like, you know, if you're patient, you'll be there. And it's not like a thing like Santana Garrett, where it's like, she's at a different age. She's wrestled there. She was there last year. She wasn't even in this one. She wasn't even in it this year. So it's like, that's kind of a different thing. It's just kind of like, you know, they're in no rush, because they'll need more women, but they got plenty of women. Just think about think about all these women that are here. They already signed some of them. Some of them may get signed later. They already got women like NXT UK. Yeah. Didn't think of the women that are already in NXT that still, like, you know, trying to get time and stuff. And then, like, the WWE roster. So it's almost like an embarrassment of riches. Like, they aren't in a rush, because women know if they want to make the most money, WWE still be, like, that endpoint. And if they got to wait an extra 6 months or a year for it to be a proper time, like, why not wait? You can still get more indie work, and you still get practice, and, you know, they're always watching.
Yeah. I do wonder about, like, I mean, just the way it is, but age limitations. Now, I mean, obviously not, they're putting age limitations on people. Well, not in writing, obviously. But, you know, women want to start families, they want to do this, they want to do that, and, you know, there's a certain amount of time frame you have.
Yeah.
So,
then you become a trainer. Like, yeah, like, what's her face? Serena Deeb did.
Yeah, and, Sarah Amato. That was always, yeah, she was at the wrong time. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she came. She was kind of like, you know, I was too good back when, a time where being too good didn't matter. Like, I didn't have the look, and, like, women's wrestling wasn't what it was. It's a lot of people like that, where it's like they just came at the wrong, like, 5 or 6 years too soon. And, I mean, at least it's like some of them now, they can kind of, like, get – I like the fact that Mercedes Martinez is on WWE TV, considering how long she's been wrestling, how old she is, just is kind of, like, amazing. Because normally it's like, nah, they wouldn't touch you with a 10-foot pole, because, like, you too damn old. That would have been the line they would have used. And then, like, that's the other thing about the Mae Young class. Like, it's a lot of older women that, like, getting chances, and they're, like, winning, you know, because it's like you got – late 15, 20 year, like late 30s, early 40s, and like women that don't have normal body types. Like, I made a joke, like, you know, you don't normally see big women luchadors. And whenever would you see that in WWE? And they had one, I can't remember her name. She won. I couldn't even remember her name, and I don't feel like pulling up a young, the young bracket. And the one I laughed at was last week, where it was Xia Li and the other girl she fought, Karen Q, and it was kind of like China versus like Chinese American, and they built up their whole thing. Like, one's from Chinatown in New York, one's from China. They do the bow, and then they bust out the kung fu move.
Yes.
Like, I'm like, this is like a damn movie. And it's kind of like they just built like a whole storyline. Like they both have like one played the villain, and they both have respect, and then they were both on kind of like, you know, this is a dream come true. Different representations of China like being respected, and you know, like I can't remember the last time they had like a cultural thing like that, and they built it up in like a respectful way, and they didn't make fun of it. And I know people was kind of like, you weren't used to seeing it because like you haven't seen stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, there'd be ceremonial salt being thrown, or is that for Japanese wrestlers only?
Japanese. Or people pretending to be Japanese, like Yokozuna did all that time.
Man.
I swore he was Japanese.
Same here, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's pre-internet days.
So stupid.
Okay, quick thing before we leave wrestling, because I want to talk about SmackDown for just a second. Just two quick things. One, kudos to R-Truth, because he is life goals. The fact that he is that old, and he still has a six-pack, and he's still on TV getting segments and matches, is amazing.
I've actually got a reason why for that. I was going to bring up the Dolph Ziggler thing I went to Wednesday, and he has a Q&A at the end. And someone said, who would make a great comedy tag team with like him and whoever else? And someone yelled Rusev, and he goes, Rusev is an incredibly funny guy. Somebody yelled R-Truth. And he goes, okay, stop. He's like, stop right now. I'll tell you dead honest truth. If you go see Dolph Ziggler, he's actually like in character. Mm-hmm. He's not the wrestling in character. Because I was trying to figure out how and why is he getting away with using Dolph Ziggler on the road? Because WWE clearly owns that. And some of the content, they wouldn't be like, I don't know if we want you using our name with this. Anyways, he goes, and I'm being dead serious here, R-Truth is the most beloved WWE superstar ever. Yeah. Everyone loves this guy. And he goes, if I'm 49 years old and I still look like I'm 19, whatever he said, 30 years later, then we need to make sure we know how this man was made. Like, it was great, but he like totally broke character. It was like all sincerity. He goes, that man deserves everything he gets.
Yeah, like you can tell, like you see the pictures of him and Vince, and it's like you can tell he likes him because the fact that one, he still has a job, he's on TV, and everything you've heard is like that same thing, and it's hilarious because they put him and Carmella together, and you know what I figured out what Carmella's superpower is? She's likable, and she can vibe with anybody they put with her. Because think about. I was comparing those two together and how natural that looked, and when they had R-Truth with Eve and how awkward that looked, like Eve trying to be cool and hip, even though for whatever reason it didn't translate. And it's like Carmella's just, it's funny, like she's just nice. Like, and she can, like, you know, she vibe with Enzo and Kaz. She vibe when they had that mixed match challenge thing with the New Day. I'm looking at Daniel Bryan looking like, I just dropped acid because I'm doing the interview thing, and they stop and they start dancing, and he has this look like, what in the world am I looking? And normally that would be cringeworthy, but they're just so likable and funny. I'm watching that work, and I'm just looking at this and just laughing my ass off because it's like, this is, if they didn't have, you know, people talking about the whole brand split thing, this is one of the hidden gems of brand split. The fact that they can have something like this and they get time, and, you know, I'm still getting used to Carmella's hair because it's not even brown; it's like purple brown.
Yeah. And they didn't like with no build up or anything; it just came out different one day. Like, wonder why? I do wonder why she did that. Like,
probably because it was like it's like six blondes on the roster anyway, and
I mean, it doesn't hurt anything. So
yeah, I know it's kind of like this whole Vince like blonde thing, but it's like half the damn roster is blonde. So maybe she just wanted to do something different. Even though it is like different, but that one, and then the SmackDown segment with Naomi, Asuka, and Mandy Rose, and Sonya Deville, because I'm just amazed that we reached a point in wrestling in 2018 that we realize when a white woman tries to touch a black woman here without permission, it's considered a heel move. Because I'm watching that, and I'm seeing Asuka and Naomi joking around, and then Mandy Rose is perfect with it, like being the beautiful bigot with the gay best friend. Like, that's straight up, that's straight like a CW like TV movie. And she's there making jokes and try to touch her hair. And Oscar, like, she just wanted to punch her in the face. Like, no, you can't. Like, no, don't touch her hair. Like, what's wrong with you? And I'm just sitting here laughing, like, who wrote this segment? Because who would know that that's a, like, who would know that that would be a thing? Like, somebody going to start a fight trying to touch a black woman's hair.
This is where I just get dumb. Like, I don't understand how people just go up and touch other people.
Oh, that's a thing.
Yeah, no. I understand that. But it's just like, who does that? Like, what are you thinking?
That's happened to me.
I know. You told me before.
Yeah. So, like, that's, and that's so infuriating. Like, that's a thing, and people don't understand. Like, because it's always two reactions. One, the reaction is, who would be crazy enough to just walk up to some strangers and start touching their hair, which is the normal reaction to have. And then the other one's like, oh, I just want to see. It just looks so different. I just want to, like, it's magic, or it's like they can't imagine it's real. And it's like, we're not zoo animals. You just can't walk up to somebody and just, what's wrong with you? That's the normal thing is, like, don't do that. Like, if you don't know them, and it just, you just don't do it. But people just have this idea of doing it. And it's funny because I follow, like, you know, you could tell Mandy Rose has been around black people enough to know that doing that is a no-no, because the way she was kind of doing it and playing it off was like, she knew she was stepping out of line. And just, they had that. And there's something simple, like, SmackDown's funny where that's a back of attitude era thing. How do you start a match? Oh, you bumped into me, or you cracked a joke. This one's like, oh, I tried to touch your hair.
Yeah.
And now we're gonna have a tag team match, and basically to set up them wrestling the Iconics in Australia. What's that, next week?
Yeah, next Friday. Is it Friday?
Next Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's Sunday there, right?
Mm-hmm. So just have some, like, so just little simple things like that, and then the whole one night in Milwaukee.
All right. I know this wasn't part of it. One night in Milwaukee, like, okay, and he is called Drama King. So, it's like, okay, he's just starting drama. All right, that's fine.
Yeah. But you know what's funny? Somebody put up an old video when The Rock was there, and he was making jokes about Lana, and he brought up Milwaukee. And I wonder who remembered that.
Oh, that'd be kind of funny.
Yeah, like, oh, you know, the Wisconsin wheelbarrow. I heard you did that in Milwaukee. Like, he was basically talking, like, all these sexual positions that apparently Lana was good at right when they got back. And now, because I wonder, like, why Milwaukee? Like, of all, like, that just seemed kind of random and odd. Like, oops. I mean, it's Milwaukee. Like, no offense to the people. I know we have friends who live in that area, but that just, I mean, I guess they on a roll, like a SmackDown taping, and apparently they have video next week. The crowd chanting, you know, Milwaukee is like, wait, he's the bad guy. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's funny because we're talking, and honestly, that was like, if you want to talk about progressive, like, that's what the Mae Young thing is, and presentation, mm-hmm. everything, and mm-hmm. then on the flip side, you've got, you know, I would say the opposite.
With slut shaming.
Yeah, Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's like he says a story and they automatically believe him, even though he's the villain. Like,
yeah.
That's kind of like backwards, and I expect, and SmackDown crowds tend to be more progressive and stuff like that. So shame on you, SmackDown, even though you redeem yourself by cheering Becky Lynch for beating up somebody during their photo shoot, taking a picture, and we can leave wrestling with this. They got to be booking Becky Lynch like this on purpose. Because nobody been booked like this since Steve Austin. Like, Charlotte's having a photo shoot. Becky shows up, beats her up at the photo shoot, takes a picture with the title while standing over her, brags about it, and they're chanting Becky. And she's on there bragging about it on Twitter, and everybody's liking it. And WWE's putting it, like, on their WWE.com page. She's been getting over on Charlotte, like, every time they have a segment, every single week.
Well, I'm waiting for it to end, though. Like, it's inevitable Charlotte takes over in this. But I think it's just WWE wanted it to go one way, and it wasn't going to. And instead of having the crowd revolt again against something they wanted, mm-hmm. I think they were just smart enough to just keep doing whatever.
Yeah, let's
cheer,
keep
let her cheer.
Let's keep booking her like a bully badass, and then whatever happens, happens. But it's kind of like sooner or later, you know, Charlotte got to do something. Other, you know, I know we talk about Daniel Bryan eventually, but it's like, yeah, like this has been going on for like a month. And like every single week, it's been, you know, Becky clowning her, Becky jumping out the crowd, beating her up, Becky beating her up again, Becky beating her up at the contract signing, Becky winning the title, Becky beating her up the day after winning the title, Becky showing up the photo shoots, beating her up. Like, why, if I'm a Charlotte fan, why would I keep rooting for this loser?
Yeah. It's Charlotte really didn't do anything wrong.
Nope.
But, okay, like, whatever. So... okay. So.
It segues into what we talk about. It's not like she did anything wrong. It's just that she happens to exist in a position where people don't want her to be there.
Right.
Kind of like the trailer that we saw that dropped like at midnight. So I didn't see it in the morning. I'm talking about X-Men. Like, yeah. they dropped that late. I'm like, because they said we're going to drop it such and such night. And I'm waiting up. I went to sleep. And then I wake up the next morning and watch it, and I saw all that. They dropped it like midnight. Who drops a trailer at midnight?
Did you see the trailer?
Here's the thing. It's not like the trailer's okay. So we're talking about X-Men Dark Phoenix. And it's funny where it's not that the trailer's bad. It's just people, I don't think people want to see this movie because it's like they tired of Fox's X-Men, and they ready to move on to Marvel's X-Men. I think that's just the main vibe. And it's kind of like, you know, the Phoenix story is kind of tired anyway. And it's, you get from the trailer, like, you don't know how much different it is from X-Men The Last Stand. Like, you see some stuff where it's in space, so that helps. You don't really know what's going on. It's kind of like they tell you bits and pieces, but the bits and pieces are enough. I will say, I laughed at the line Magneto said, like, talk to Professor X, talking about, you know, you always say you're sorry, you always give speeches, but no one cares. Boy, if they don't sound like a damn message board, I don't know what doesn't.
Well, the thing with this is the Phoenix Saga is in space. It's a huge story. And I'm watching the trailer, I'm going, oh, okay, so here we go with this, here we go. And I'm like, where's the, come on, where are we going here? And it's just another nondescript town they're going to fight in that blows up. And, you know, Magneto's hanging out in the jungle somewhere, apparently. And I'm going, this doesn't look big. Like, this just looks like a small story again. And it's the, I know everyone now keys in on the Avengers. Like, they're the big shit, right? X-Men used to be the king. I mean, over everybody. I know Batman's number one in sales all the time now. That used to be X-Men, and then Uncanny X-Men, and then New Mutants or X-Force or Wolverine.
And you know Batman. Why that changed? Because they sold the rights and they got pissy about it. You know, like, and I'm sure that'll change again, because now they had the rights back. It's like, okay, we can market them again. Yeah, X-Men was like, you know, X-Men and Spider-Man were king of the hill as far as that went. And it says a lot that X-Men was like the first, like, big comic movie that kind of like started off this era. And it's just, okay, it's multiple parts. And like, they showed some stuff in space, but they didn't show enough stuff and like for you to get excited about. Cause the Phoenix Saga is like it's not just, you know, grounded stuff, Nate. And all the stuff, like, you know, is more grounded, it's more psychological. It's like, no, it's some weird space shit going on. Like, she eats a sun and blow up a galaxy. You got a whole alien empire they're fighting with. And Fox's biggest issue, and it's not just Fox, it's everybody that's not Marvel, is that they're still ashamed of doing comic books. And like, you cannot do this half-ass. If you're gonna do it, you do it. Otherwise, don't. Like, you can ground Batman. Batman lends itself to be grounded and gritty if you want. It's not necessarily the only way of doing it or the best way, but it's a good way of doing it. You can't ground the X-Men. It's the X-Men. Like, it's weird mutants with, like, big... People like comics, so they like bright colors, bright lights, laser beams. They like big spectacles. X-Men have all been... Like, you've seen it. We both read the comics. We've seen the costumes. And they always been like, we gonna have them black leather. We're going to have a nondescript costumes. And even Cam brought up a good point. even if you don't like the like the fact that they had the a certain comic counterpart costumes at the end of X-Men Apocalypse that matched a comic age, and then they decide not to use those and have the nondescript like new X-Men comics where it's kind of like bland and basic. It's like, yeah, it's comic right. You went that route and then you changed your mind. Like, stop half-assing it. This the because more than likely this is the last chance you're gonna get to make your movie, because after this is done, I don't. It's just been like, I don't. Even if the movie's good, because I don't know how good the movie or not good the movie's gonna be. Yeah. But even if it's good, people, I think it's gonna get to the point where it's gonna be like Solo or Justice League. It's just gonna be like people just not gonna care. It's just gonna be too much noise and static around it that people are just gonna like. People are already kind of tuned out anyway, and it's still weird that this whole Mystique running the X-Men thing, because Jennifer Lawrence is a big star.
Boy, she really has that written in. She is not going to be in makeup anymore, huh? Because I don't think, did they show a shot of her?
Yeah, mm-hmm. They showed like two or three.
I just missed it then, because I'm thinking, I don't blame her. And you'd also think with CGI, couldn't she just wear a green bodysuit?
I don't think it
I don't know.
I don't think it's good enough for them to move it well enough with, or probably if it did, it would cost too much. Because you would think, like, with green, you know, blue screen and green screen and anything like that, they could do it. But if they could have done it and have it look right, they'd have done it. It's a reason why people tend to do makeup, like, with stuff like Drax and the same thing. Like, you know, I doubt Batista and Zoe Saldana if I getting painted up all the damn time either. I know. But it's kind of like it's a reason they still do the paint, because it just looks better on camera. I don't know. It's like they still like they didn't say what Jessica Chastain's character is. They doing this whole, well, you might think she's this one person, but we ain't going to tell you. Like, just tell people. Like, it ain't this whole, I hate when they do these surprises for no reason type thing. Like, Matt Damon in Interstellar was a surprise, because you had no idea he was in the movie, and it makes sense in the movie. What's his name? Christoph Waltz being Blofeld, but not saying he was till halfway through the movie, didn't do anybody favors, because it's like, we know who you are, why you lying? And I've told you before, if you watch that movie with subtitles, they let you know who he is the first time he talks. An hour and a half before he tells you what his name is. So it's kind of like, yeah, there's no, like, you know, secrets out there. Same thing like Star Trek Into Darkness. Oh, I'm not playing Khan. I'm playing like this other dude. What are we doing? Like, you just doing a surprise for surprise's sake? I've never been a fan of that if it doesn't serve any purpose. Because, like, you're just being too cute for school and you're kind of lying to the audience. And even Captain Marvel's doing that with Jude Law's character for, like, I mean, I'm probably playing this guy, but I'm not contractually allowed to say it because Marvel would cut my tongue out if I say it. Like, all right, whatever.
Who's he supposed to be?
Mar-Vell.
Is he the original one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, well, you know, I can't say if I'm playing that or not because Marvel said I can't say it.
Oh, okay.
Sure thing, Chief. You're playing Bob the Space Cop. Like, whatever.
Okay, no, it's fine. Like I said, we talked last week. I don't know much about... Mm-hmm. The most I know about Captain Marvel was the Death of Captain Marvel graphic novel. The original one. That's all I know about him. And I know the original guy was dead for a long time, and I think they brought him back, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was like, oh, alright, cool, whatever. But, I don't know, man, it's... I watched Age of Apocalypse again, and it's fine. It's... I don't know. It's like, whatever. And, you know, people really, really didn't like that one. It didn't do as well as the others.
Yeah, because that was during that time when, like, every sequel bombed. Like, that one didn't do as well as the others. The last Transformer one made, like, half of what the previous one made. Yeah. And, it, like, Pirates of the Caribbean didn't do as well. It was during that time, it was like, you know, our sequels, they're like, no, they just made bad ones.
Yeah. So since you brought this up, this was the other preview. I mean, there's not much more to say about previews here, but this one, there's a lot to talk about. You saw the Bumblebee trailer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've said this over and over again. I do not like the Transformers movies. That being said, these assholes are going to get me to go spend money to see this movie.
Uh-huh.
This looks this is what the originals should have looked like.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember, what is the cassette player? It's Soundwave.
Soundwave.
It's Rumble and who's the Jaguar?
Because everyone remembers Rabbit. Ravage.
Ravage. Okay. So they have that whole thing. Like the original trailer, the first trailer they had, you know, Bumblebee's a Volkswagen, good. Starscream looks like an F-16, looks like Starscream in color and all that. And you're like, all right, that's pretty good. All right. They just went, all right, let's make sure everybody looks like the way we remember the toys look. Even Optimus Prime.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the 10-year-old kid in me just went, wait, what? And as soon as it was over, I just went, I don't want to go see this.
You're going to see it.
They're going to make me go see this now. And
you are going to go see it. And that's the vibe I've been hearing from people, because people are like, well, I don't know Transformers. So then they watch the trailers like, yes. I'm going to end up seeing this, because it's like, this is how it should. And that's like, this is how it should have always looked. Like, it looks like the cartoon and toys brought to light movie life.
Yes.
And when else are you going to get to see a movie where Angela Bassett's being a Decepticon?
Which one's she?
She was the one that, she's one of them. She was the one that talked. Like, in the last trailer, talking about, you know, basically the whole bring Bumblebee to us, or we're going to bring the war to you type thing, when they're talking to, like, John Cena. Like, and you keep,
which is hilarious.
And you keep forgetting, like, yeah, John Cena's in this
the bad
too.
Guy.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, and then you see the Cybertron stuff, you see Optimus, and you know what's going to happen? This movie's going to come out, it's going to do well, they're going to use it as a reboot, and then they're going to run back Transformers. Like, this, we're going to do Transformers the way it should have been done in the first place. Which is hilarious considering how much money those movies made, because I made the point to somebody, like, you know, we always talk about how quality rises to the top. Transformers 3 and 4 made more than The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises. Yeah, and both of those Batman movies made over $1 billion, but Transformers 3 made 1.1 and Transformers 4 made like 1.1.
Jesus. Well, yeah, I'm guessing that the overseas, like Japanese, Chinese markets probably love those. Cuz that's where they came from originally anyways. According to the toys that made us.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing this movie. Even, like, I was going to probably see it anyway because I like Transformers. But this one definitely feel like, you know, like, I'm not a Michael Bay hater, but I can get why people didn't like those movies, because it's like, they didn't look like Transformers. They look like things, like metal things that just walked and talked. So Transformers that look like Transformers and move like Transformers are definitely, like, enjoyable to watch, because they'll bring in somebody that kind of grew up on a cartoon and comics, like, okay, I recognize this, it's the same voices, I can do that. You know, Travis Knight's a good director, he can do this type of thing. Like, Bumblebee seems like more toward the younger crowd anyway. I just have the feeling like if this does well, they'll just have this and start a new universe.
Yeah, it, I mean, money's money. So, you know, if this does good, and I'll be, it looks cool enough that it may, you know, like I said, the interest is probably going to be there. So yeah, that it could lend itself to more people going to see it and more people, yeah, you know.
I got a feeling that, like, from all, like, all the talk's been positive. I think the people are kind of, like, skeptical in the beginning. But the more people have seen it and seen more of it, the more people have liked. And I think they've done a good job. It's like, okay, we're roping you in slowly. Like, okay, this isn't Michael Bay's Transformers. This is the Transformer you remember. Bumblebee's cute. Anyway, like, it's the reason why they're starting with that one. So it's like, you know, the girl's hero's journey, so we can start with that. And then it's like, oh, the Decepticons are like Decepticons, so I can see that. Or I recognize John Cena, so it's like, okay, I'm mildly intrigued. And then you show the next one's like, oh, stuff on Cybertron, Optimus Prime looking like Optimus Prime, Soundwave looking like a tape, like Soundwave is a tape deck, like, oh. So this is really Transformers. Now I'm even more curious. So it's kind of like they did a good job with the trail. Like, they dropped enough breadcrumbs to kind of, like, bring you in off of the fence. It's like, okay, from I doubt I want to see. It's like, yeah, I see it, you know. And I think it's come out, what, December?
I think it's Christmas time.
Perfect time, toy time.
Yeah.
Mommy, get me this.
Yeah. Let me see. I want to make sure, because I know something else comes out. Well, I know Aquaman's out that time as well. That's the beginning of December, I believe.
Let's see.
So it takes place in 1987.
Comes out December 21st.
All right, so yeah, just in time for... it's not like they don't know what they're doing. Because, all right, so, you know, as we both said, people didn't like the Transformers movies, and they also made a ton of money. So there's going to be a definite, interest, you know?
Yeah.
So and it's going to make money. So.
Yeah, and somebody made a good point, kind of like, you know, Transformers has always been a kid's thing, because kids love robots, and like robots, you know, what kid doesn't like a truck turn into a talking robot with a gun?
Uh-huh.
And the Michael Bay thing, it's been more like, I'm not like, I like the movies for what they were. I enjoy it for like dumb fun, but it's like, it's not, those are not kids movies at all. Like, you know, not even talking the thing, like, you know, I doubt kids remember Optimus Prime shooting Kelsey Grammer.
Yes.
Or not even talking about the whole how they, Michael Bay treats women type thing with his camera, like between Megan Fox bent over a car every 15 seconds, or like the third one with what's the name, Rose Hunt and Whitley. Yeah. And I always laugh at that. I'm like, really, this doofus is going to be dating this supermodel?
Yeah.
This doofus is no job.
Cause,
yeah, because he saved. Like, even you can kind of see the one making for, like, they both go to the same school. Like, yeah, she's gorgeous, but, you know, she probably lonely because she get trapped in her beauty type thing. They're around the same age, same career thing, yada, yada, yada. It ain't no way his monkey ass is dating some supermodel with a job and he don't got a job. I don't care what he saved.
Yeah, but, real quick, Aquaman comes out the same day.
Well, there you go.
So we got a little bit of a competition again with these studios, and got to figure that's on purpose. I don't know why you do that on purpose, but
I mean, same way why Jumanji came out the same time as Star Wars.
Yeah, not on the same day though.
And but around the smoke. But most people was kind of like, you know, we gonna move our stuff away. And I know the sequel is like, we coming out the same day. Like, we picking this day. We know Star Wars is coming out. Whatever. Because they figure, you know, it's going to be a crowd that may, they can't see Star Wars because it's sold out. So they'll see this. And it showed, I think it showed that, you know, if the movie's good, it's enough. You can have two movies at the same time be enough money for like two.
How about four? December 21st. Alita, Battle Angel, Aquaman, Bumblebee, and then a comedy, Holmes and Watson, with Will Ferrell. I think it's Will Ferrell.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Okay. I'll tell you this right now. Holmes, you know, Will Ferrell, that'll be fine because it's comedy different from the other two. Alita, Battle Angel is going to bomb hard.
Why would you do that?
That movie got delayed. They kept pushing. That movie's supposed to come out like a year ago. Like a year and a half ago, and they kept getting delayed, stuff like that. Yeah, that's aspirational. And that movie is not cheap.
No.
Like, that movie costs a lot of money, and I haven't heard anybody that's, like, excited to see that. It's going to be one of those Jupiter Ascending type things where it's like, why was this made, and why did it come out when it came out? One of those, we always say we wanted to see different stuff, but not really, because... I'm not going to see... Like, if I had a choice between Aquaman, Bumblebee, and that, that's coming in last by far. Like, yeah, that's... Why would they come out that day?
Here, all right, listen. Look at this. This is the release schedule for December. December 7th. We start with an uplifting movie, the re-release of Schindler's List. I don't know what The Silence is. What is this? She got Jennifer Lawrence, sort of a family struggling to survive in a world terrorized by deadly primeval species who have bred for decades. Okay, whatever. So you got that. The next week is Mortal Engines The Mule.
Okay, I saw that. That's the Peter Jackson one, like the cities, the Talkins, the cities that destroy other cities, yeah.
Then we got The Mule that's directed by Clint Eastwood. Another World War II veterans thing. God damn, I think I'm making a movie a year now. Jesus. Second Act with Jennifer Lopez. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And that's some limited releases. December 19th, which is a Wednesday, is Mary Poppins Returns. Mm-hmm. Then you've got The Four on December 21st. Mm-hmm. Then Christmas Day on the basis of sex.
Ho, ho, ho.
With Felicity Jones. Her story made blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's, oh, it's by, oh, it's about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Okay. You've got, and I'm being dead serious here, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 huge movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in scope. So, I mean, Mortal Engines looks gigantic. Doesn't look that interesting,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, that Mary Poppins is gonna make all the make all the damn money in the world.
That's why I'm surprised that wasn't a Christmas Day movie. I know Christmas is a Tuesday. I know it's not a usual release day, but
they probably want to get a head. They probably want to get a head start.
Yeah, well, that's what you think that you do with. I don't know. I don't know what you do here, but I think it's very. Oh, I'm sorry. There's also Welcome to Marwen with Steve Carell. Oh, it's by Robert Zemeckis. So.
Yeah, I heard about that. I heard that's going to be real good.
So, that's your earnest movie for Christmas. You've got your comedy. No horror movie, though.
Isn't that the way you describe that Jennifer Lawrence movie sound like a horror movie?
Yeah, but that comes out way at the beginning. And it's like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you just move? And I'm being dead serious. If you're Alita Battle Angel, move up to December 7th. Like, what are you doing?
Or move to a different month.
Yeah, well, they can't put it back another year.
Put it January. Like,
well, that's what I'm getting at. It was supposed to be out in 2017, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like people need to learn their lessons. Like, it's better to move your date than just coming out getting slaughtered, because movies have died slowly because they came out the wrong time. And it has nothing to do with movie quality. It's like, you competing with Aquaman be bad enough. You can compete with Aquaman and Bumblebee, and this kind of like you, this unknown movie based on this manga that people probably never heard of and stuff. And I know it's like, oh, James Cameron wanted to do this for the longest time, and Robert Rodriguez is doing it. Yeah, and like I've seen the trailers, I've seen Bumblebee, I've seen Aquaman, and I've seen this one. Like, this one ain't competing with those two, as far as like I want to go see. Like, I'm not picking that one over the other two.
No, absolutely not.
And I wouldn't pick that one over either of the two. It's not like it's one of the other movies come out. They're both coming out with Battle Angels. Like, yeah, that's gonna be what's. Oh, it's surprisingly dismal third or fourth place with such and such. It's one of those, I guess. The industry wasn't ready for. Like, no, you came out the same time as two movies people really want to see.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the October schedule. They could have moved it up.
Mm-hmm.
Dick in October. You're not winning any awards. Side Venom. Don't worry about it.
That's why Venom's going to make the money it make, because it's like, it hasn't really been anything. I haven't been movies like 2-3 weeks. Like, the last movie I saw was Predator. Like, it hasn't really been a lot of movies. Like, since August came, it hasn't been really a lot of movies.
And it's just like, died off again, which is, they've gotten away from doing that, but.
Like, usually you have stuff, like, I remember, like, last year, what, it came out in September?
Yes.
And then something came out in October, and then you had November, then Thor came out in November, and then you had, like, The Last Jedi and all the other stuff in December. So it's like, yeah, last year you had at least one big movie, like, each month, and this year it's like September's just been dead for the most part.
Yeah. Speaking of Venom,
mm-hmm.
What do you think about the PG-13 thing? Because Tom Hardy doesn't sound like he's too happy about it. He's being diplomatic, but if you can read between the lines on this one.
No one, you know what's funny? The actors always, if they had a choice between PG-13 and R, they always say R. Because Jason Statham said the same thing about The Meg. He wanted to be R. And people asked The Rock about Skyscraper, like, why isn't R? It's like, you make less money.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that type of movie is like, you know, you try to get as much money as possible. And then, like, unless it's a movie that has to be R, I get the thought process. Like, and, you know, people made fun of The Meg being PG-13 with a shark, but that movie made over $500 million.
Yes.
Well, it ain't making that much being rated R. And to be honest, with Venom, I know why he would want it to be done, but if it's something where you may think you might sneak into the Marvel Universe one day, or you want to play good with Marvel, you can't have a PG-13 Spider-Man and an R-rated Venom.
Yeah, that's exactly why.
Yeah, and that's probably why they did it, which makes sense. It's like, how many, we've talked about this, how many comic movies really need to be R?
Yeah, really, not a lot.
Yeah,
there aren't a whole lot of characters, but isn't Venom one of them, though?
I mean,
kind of.
That's the thing. Only if he by himself, but he shouldn't be by himself.
True.
And that's where the conundrum comes in. Like, because you can have an R-rated Spider-Man movie just because Venom's in it. Like, that shit wouldn't fly. But Venom without Spider-Man doesn't make sense either. It's one of those. I use an example. You can have an R-rated Joker movie and it makes sense. Because that character labels itself to be R-rated. And Batman, if we're really honest, is an R-rated thing. They just take the blood out and make it PG-13.
Yeah.
So,
since you brought up Joker, what do you think?
I am torn.
Yes.
Because I had no desire to see this, and I thought it was just a waste of time. The more I see stuff from it, I'm just like, I'm intrigued, even though I don't want to be. It's kind of like, they doing something different, and I give them kudos to that. And it's like, they going for it, and Joaquin Phoenix is Joaquin Phoenix. Like, he's, whatever you say about how quirky and weird he is, he can act his ass off. And it's not, and he doesn't like he's doing, like, and think about this. People worry about him being, you know, comparing him to Heath Ledger. All he had to do would be better than Jared Leto.
Yeah. And I didn't hate Jared Leto. I hated what they gave him to do. I hated how they made him look.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Like, that we call, like, Narcos Joker would never work for me. Like,
yeah.
I can imagine the Joker driving a neon Lamborghini, but whatever. But no, it's kind of like, it's just, I don't know what they're going for. It's intriguing.
Yes. And, like, it was basically, he's starting off as, like, a Pagliacci style clown makeup. And, I mean, they showed him on the, they showed, like, the paparazzi photos of him arguing with somebody. I'm sorry, video, not photos. Him arguing with somebody. And then they showed, like, the subway scene, a subway scene where he gets off in full Joker Joker makeup. And
after he takes the mask off with the makeup on.
Yeah. And
running, and you're wondering, like, what happened to cause that? And he just got this, that walk is like, yeah, it's intriguing.
Yes.
That's what I keep saying. It's kind of like, I went from this seems dumb to like, maybe I want to see this. And that's the funny thing. It's kind of
we both know we're going to see it. I mean, you know, we're going to go.
By the time it comes out, yes, we'll definitely be there. But at first it was like, this seemed to seem like a waste of time. But it's funny. We always say, I don't mind different lawns if it's funny. I mean, not lawns, but lawns is good. I don't mind different. And this one, it seemed like they're doing something different. And it seems like it's a lot of talent and quality in this.
Yeah.
And it's like, it ain't like, they half ass. And it's funny, we talk about DC not seem like they know what they're doing. This seems like, this, you know what this reminds me of? Logan. Like, because that is way different than all the other X-Men movies that came out. And it's like, if you watch the X-Men movies and you watch Logan, it's like, huh? Like, it's almost like two, even though they're like in the same universe and like the story makes sense based on that, it just seems like two completely different style of movies. Even like they both have Hugh Jackman, one seems more thoughtful grown up. And I don't like using the term like grown up in comic movies, because it's like, it's patronized a comic movie, like comic movies aren't grown up, but like that one seems like it's not it's a comic movie that doesn't seem like a comic movie. Like, if Wolverine wasn't a superhero and he was just like a dude and it was a Western, it still works, because that's how it felt like. Like, he didn't have to be, like, it didn't have to be a superhero movie for it to feel like a viable movie.
Yeah.
And this Joker movie kind of feels like the same way. Like, this just seems like this psychological thriller horror movie, and it just happens to involve the Joker.
And I know people are torn on this guy, but Todd Phillips is the director. Him directing something mean-spirited and dark is right up his alley.
Uh-huh.
And I guess he helped write it, so you can get away with... Okay, this goes to the PG-13R argument. Is this going to be rated R? I mean, they're not spending a lot of money on it. And it's by a guy who doesn't make PG-13 movies. With another guy that doesn't really star in PG-13 movies, with a producer that makes R-rated movies as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you? I mean,
you could.
It's got to be R, right? I mean,
they could. It's kind of like. This no reason for it not to be R. Like, it's not this whole, because they didn't spend a lot of money making it anyway. And it's like you have more freedom when your budget's smaller.
Yeah.
Like the same thing with like Logan. Like Logan was the budget like 70, it was like under $100 million. And it's like they were able to do R because of that. Like they didn't spend a lot of money so they could take more risks. And this been what, 40, what's the budget, like 45?
Yeah, because I can't imagine this has a lot of special effects in it. Outside of like the Joker, if they use the Joker laughing gas, I guess that could be part of it, but not a whole lot. That'd be the biggest thing for me. And outside of that, he's a grounded character. Like even Batman movies, they make him so over the top. They don't even need to be that over the top. I guess people come to expect it though. So
yeah, Batman's this. It's this funny thing where the tone is just all over the place with it's Batman, because
yeah.
I mean, we can finish with the other trailer that we saw, but it's like Batman's a funny thing. Imagine you watch The Dark Knight and then you watch Batman Returns. Like, yeah, like it's funny where those movies are like Batman and Batman Returns are both consider real good movies now, but back then, especially Batman Returns, like those, you really watch those are some weird ass movies. Like how they let Tim Burton, I can see why I wonder, but like, yeah, I don't know if we keep doing this Tim Burton stuff, because it was like how they let him do that in the first place is beyond me. Like these big budget movies, and it's just like it's weird. Like the vibe is weird, the look is weird. It's just kind of like, and I always laugh. I think about that compared to the Nolan ones, like it's rooted in practicality, even though those movies ain't really practical either. It's like it's just such a contrast between the two, and they both work in different ways, because people tend to have Batman rigid, and it's like Batman's never been it's been all these different views of Batman in cartoons and comics and movies. It's like that's the beauty of Batman, you can do whatever you want as long as you got the core basis of what Batman works. And this Joker movie, we both gonna end up seeing it, mm-hmm. and we're gonna be surprised, like, oh, I actually like this more than I can't wait till we do the show, we end up saying, well, I like this more than I thought I would. Look at us being wrong about this movie, I guess, you know, making it wasn't a mistake.
It's the thing I like about it is, and I'll go back to the Todd Phillips part, and I guess this is why I've got some faith in it. Especially after seeing some of this stuff. And mind you, we've seen like whatever created presentation they made with like the Who song behind it. And then the paparazzi stuff or whatever, on-street stuff. So we don't really have a grasp of what this is going to be like. But did you ever see the movie Due Date he made with
Robert Downey Jr.? Yes, that mean-ass movie.
I love that movie. And my favorite part is, and one, I'm a dog lover. I want to say animal lover, but if I see a snake, peace out, dude, you're dead. That part where they come out and he spits in Zach Galifianakis' dog right in the face, I saw that in the preview. I saw that again on the TV previews. I saw that in the theater, and I laughed the hardest when I saw that in the theater. That is such a vile thing to do.
Because who would ever think about doing
exactly. Exactly. So that... That comes from the guy who's directing a movie about the sadistic psychopath.
Like Todd Phillips is a
weird dude.
I don't know if he personally is, but I know his movies. Like I can't even watch The Hangover 3 again. Not just because a bad movie. Yeah. That's a mean ass. Like even me for The Hangover, that movie is like real like sadistic mean.
Yes,
like. If John Goodman would have shot all of them, I wouldn't have felt bad. Basically, like that's how that vibe was. He went from okay, you've been through here rooting for these lovable rascals to like fuck these guys.
Yes, all of them. And
yeah,
because Bradley Cooper is supposed to be the worst of the bunch, but he was just kind of on par. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Zach Galifianakis went from like I'm this love, I'm this mean spirited asshole. Like it was sometimes watching this and I was just cringing. Like the stuff he was saying, everything, and I'm like, this is not fun. Like at all. And now that dude's directing the Joker, and like yeah, the Joker ain't necessarily fun either. People like, I know people, it's this funny vibe, like people, oh, you know, the Joker is this lovable, this spunky killer. Like, no, he's not. Like, Jack Nicholson was smiling. He was still murdering people in that movie. He was just doing with a smile on his face. His whole plan, I'm a gas the entire city of Gotham.
Yeah.
That was his plan.
With a smile on his face, too.
Yeah, with a smile. I'm going to kill everybody in this metropolis city. Like, yeah, they ain't no lovable villain. Like, and nothing was lovable. He, you know, Heath Ledger was charismatic, but nobody was thinking like he was lovable. Either Jared Leto was, you know, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
So, but to wrap it up on a good thing, Creed 2.
Man, that trailer makes it look like it gives everything away, but you know it doesn't. You know mm-hmm. it doesn't. And now that's not directed by Ryan Coogler, is it?
No, he's producing it.
Okay. That's good. Still got his hands on it then. Because I thought he captured a pretty good voice for him in that movie. So knowing he wasn't directing it, okay. But did he help? He helped write it.
I think probably Stallone.
Yeah, I guarantee Stallone had his hands in
it. Yeah.
So.
And people, and you know the funny thing I always get about these movies is kind of, especially like the Creed one, tomorrow. I liked it except for the parts where it was like a Rocky movie. And like, it is a Rocky movie. Yeah. Like, it's just, I don't know where this vibe came from where people like look down on Rocky movies. Like, you know, Rocky 1 got nominated for Oscars, right?
Yeah, won for best screenplay.
Yeah, I'm like, y'all know that was like an acclaimed movie. Like, these, I think it's kind of like people think of Rocky and they think of like Rocky 4 and 3, and they don't necessarily remember like Rocky and Rocky Balboa. Like, no, these aren't just meathead, no, I'm a punch my way to the top type movies. Like, no, these movies work on a visceral, thoughtful level because Stallone puts work in it. Like, it's not just a regular ass sports movie. And people tend to be like snobbish. Like, yeah, like this one, I heard a lot of people saying, oh, he fighting Drago's son, this like Rocky IV again. And I'm like, that story makes sense. He's fighting the man whose dad killed his dad. Mm-hmm. And like everything they build up to was kind of like, you know, you hear Rocky talking about that, you know, I fought him, he broke stuff in me that didn't heal. And it's funny where you never think about the aftermath of Rocky IV. Because Rocky V, they pretend that don't count. And they go to Rocky, yeah, basically like Rocky V like doesn't count anymore because you see Rocky Balboa and it's like, yeah, you know, he retired after that and he's telling a story like he ain't brain dead like he was in Rocky V. It's less, I'm just old. And then hearing him like, yeah, because I remember watching Rocky IV. It's like, he should have been dead. Like Drago was beating the crap out of him. Like,
well, you saw like, three, right?
But that was like a 2-3 round fight.
Well, the first time, the second time, it was like six, seven rounds.
No,
like
the Mr. first
T beating the shit out of him.
That's people think about that. Both those fights were short. The first time when he loses, it goes 2 rounds.
Yeah,
gets knocked out second round. The second time he wins, it goes 3 rounds. That's it.
Wow, that was it.
They make a big deal saying like we can only go like most five. Like Rocky got enough gas to go 5 or 6 rounds. Hopefully, it's enough because he can't go longer than that. And like he's gonna get wore out. And they made a big effort saying, like, he got to put him away quick. That Drago fight was just, like, they try to murder each other. And you can look in their face, like, these are two men that look like they try to kill each other and they ain't get over it. Because you see Dolph Lundgren. Somebody put a picture, like, the face-off of them in Rocky IV and then the face-off they have now. And it looks, like, almost exactly the same stuff. For, like, you see they got 30 years of life on their faces in between those two pictures.
Even though Stallone's done his best to try and get rid of 20 of them. But
Just like, one, you got that whole thing, and then I guess the guy that's playing his son is like a real boxer. He definitely looks like a real boxer.
He's an MMA guy, actually.
Yeah, he definitely looks like he really fights. Like, that's a big dude. And I don't know, because it's kind of like, I guess he won the title, and then he's having this match. But like the first trailer, the way they frame it is like he fights him and loses because he wakes up in the hospital. So, and they're talking about all this stuff. So it's like they give away a lot, but you don't know the time. You don't know like the time frame or like what he stuff. Like each thing happens. Like is he champ when he fights face him? He loses and they have a rematch. Is it? He's like, you know, has, you know, of course she gets pregnant, has the baby, so there's a family thing. And then basically everybody else told him, like, you know, you ain't got to fight him. Like, you know, he's like, I got to do this to prove a name. And Rocky, like, you know, your dad said the same thing. He died in my hands. And Creed and Felicia Rosales, like, you can fight this dude if you want. Don't say it's for your dad. He says it's for yourself. It's almost kind of like everybody's talking him out of this, and he want to do this to prove something.
And that's kind of visceral is not the real right word, but that's kind of like an honest, I don't know, honest interpretation of him. Like, yeah. He wants to, like, that's just a basic human thing. You want to prove yourself, and you want to be better than the memory of your dad, you know?
Yeah.
What's
tough about it, and why people make a good point, is like, normally in boxing, the whole prove yourself thing is like you coming up from the bottom and working. Like Rocky's like, you know, I was poor, I was uneducated, I'm working my way out the streets, and I'm trying to do this. And everybody looking at Creed like, you rich. What you doing? Like, you, it's weird when rich people box. Because yes. They always say, like, boxing's a poor man's sport, because why else would you put yourself through this? And it's like, you know, he was already rich. He had this corporate job that he was doing well in, and he want to fight to prove a point. It's like, it'd be like if Floyd Mayweather Jr.'s son decided to be a boxer. Why? I could see, you know, like, I don't know how much money Floyd Mayweather made. I know his son made a whole bunch of money. Hopefully he's not broke by the time his kids are. It's like, you coming up in privilege, why are you a boxer? Mm-hmm. Like, out of all the sports, like, that's a violent, dangerous thing. And it's kind of like, this whole thing is like, you know, I never met my daddy. I want to, you know, but he's been a shadow, you know, he's this big shadow that's, you know, eclipsed my whole life. This is a way to kind of know who he is and stuff, and it's the best way of doing it, and I got the time to do it. And everybody else is like, your daddy wouldn't want you to do this. We see what it did to you. Like, all the people who knew his daddy is like, we know why you're doing this. It's the wrong path, but whatever, you're going to go with it, go with it.
It's also weird. This is reality too. It's also weird when the kid of a famous sports person goes into the same sport. Now I know, like, the obvious thing is, well, of course they are, but like, off the top of my head, like Cecil Fielder's kid, Prince Fielder. All right. Goddamn! Like, you see all these kids in college,
like the Manning sons.
Oh, yeah, Jesus! Well, apparently did something right, but But it's always the guys who don't work out that I'm like, maybe that's the thing. It's like when it doesn't work out, it's like, man, maybe you shouldn't have.
Yeah, but, like when Walter Payton's son.
Yeah, yeah. Example. Barry Sanders, like, Jr., I think he was another one.
You know, like Michael Jordan's son. Like, imagine mm-hmm. playing, like, I'm thinking about LeBron's son's playing basketball. Like, yeah. I don't want that pressure, you nope. know, especially the Twitter era. Like, you know, we know he had daddy, and like even his son seems like, you know, but we're at that point now where you see, like, you know, that's how, you know, we're getting old, when like Shaq's son is about to go to college.
Well, I just got an alert, actually. He's not playing this year. He has to have heart surgery.
Wow.
That's sad.
Damn.
It's one, any illness that has something like that sucks. But when you're that young and you're having that sort of problem, that really mm-hmm. sucks.
Yeah.
But like, I remember a long time ago, back when I used to watch tennis, Steffi Graf and Andre Agassi first got together, and then mm-hmm. after she retired, she started having kids. And I remember one of the announcers goes, "I hope they give that kid anything but a racket to do."
Yeah, because imagine being that child.
Yes, not just one parent, both parents.
Yeah,
and, I mean, especially one. She was one of the best ever, and then Andre got better as he got older. But then I also think of, you've got like the, like Dylan McCaffrey plays for Michigan. He's the backup right now. Christian McCaffrey plays for the Panthers. The dad mm-hmm. was Ed McCaffrey for the Broncos. But then his mm-hmm. his mom was like some Olympic athlete.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, I guess.
I mean, it's the thing, like, you, like Ben Simmons, I think his dad played basketball and his mom was like an, you know, a track level athlete. And you always wonder that kind of like how genetics works, because it's kind of like, oh, you see such and such, you know, mom 6'1", dad 6'2", so of course you're going to be 7 foot or be the super athlete. But it's like, where does Shaq come from? Because I've seen his mom.
I'm going to say spaceship, because there like, still has not been anyone like him.
Yeah, like, you know, like you see someone like Joel Embiid. He's 7'2", 250, moved like a ballerina. How? It's not like his dad was like 6'9". Like, you know, it's just one. Sometimes they just jump a generation. Like, you can see if LeBron's son becomes like the super athlete because you see LeBron. But it's like, who is LeBron's dad? Like, how did that happen? It's always like, you can see where the second or third one comes from. You always wonder where the first one comes from. Like, you see something like Bo Jackson, and you wonder, like, how would, like, you know, if, and then you see that his parents, like, how did that happen? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, like, how you have these guys, like, I'm watching football, and I see someone like Ndamukong Suh running around, like, 6'4", 6'3", 6'4", 300 pounds, like a polar bear with pads on. And you wonder, like, how did genetics work in a way for somebody to become that when their parents are nowhere near that? Like, you could, if Serena Williams had a daughter, she played tennis, you could see that. Like, you could see Randy Orton being the athlete he is, because, like, you know, his daddy wrestled, and, you know, his grandfather were athletes. You know, The Rock's dad was an athlete, so you could see that. But say, example, like Andre the Giant. How big was his parents?
Yeah, well, he also had, that disease, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but even then, it's like, you've seen people with that disease, and it's like, they get tall, but they, like, they don't get big, big like that, or they don't live that long. But it's kind of like, you see, like, I always wondered that, like, you know, where does Shaq come, like, somehow, like, and Shaq's always the one that stands out, because it's like, people, if you grew up now, you have no idea how big Shaq was. Like, it's been no, like, because one, basketball players tend not to be that, they might be that tall, but they're not that tall and, like, big anymore. So you seeing somebody that was that big, that can run, that's like some Marvel, that's like some Avengers shit. And you saw that, like real life thing. And then I think about, like, you know, to go back to Creed, like, it's funny, I always wonder, what happened to Drago? Mm-hmm. I always wondered that, because it's like, he was the Soviet hero, he's representing his country, he's, you know, he was in the military, he was, you know, his wife was an Olympic double gold medalist, like, they made him, like, you know, he was Soviet Union's native son, and he's there to represent the country in the new era of boxing. He kills the Muhammad Ali, like, Apollo Creed is basically Muhammad Ali of that generation, like, he kills, like, one of America's greatest sports heroes. And a fair fight. And it's like, but he's, you know, still do it. And then his country turns on him because this little runt dude just beats him. Like, imagine growing up, like, you just, yeah, so I was talking about, you know, he had this son, he grew up full of hate. Yeah, I could see that easy. I could see Drago being bitter, because he was bitter by the time the fight ended. Even, like, during the fight, he was kind of like, you know, I'm fighting for me. Like, fuck y'all. And now it's kind of like, you lose, you got to go back home. It's like they might have, like, banished him to Siberia and stuff, and now you got this son, and now you see Apollo Creed's son up here doing stuff. It's like, yeah, I got something for that. Like, I could see, I wonder how much they play into that, like, how much bitterness and anger he has, and how much it translates to the son he's raising. Because this, people kind of, like, played it off, like, it's not something interesting. I always wondered about that, and I always, like, I assume, like, Mr. T got locked up. So I never really thought about that one. Because it's kind of like insinuated, like, he kind of did. He seemed like the type that did jail time, got out, and became a boxer. But the whole Drago thing was just always interesting. And the fact that it's a perfect fit for this movie, because Creed's always been about legacy between father and son.
Yeah, and now they're pushing on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And going to challenge you with that, because it's the quote-unquote bad guy.
Yeah, and it's funny when even the last people made fun of the fighter he fought in Creed, talking about he didn't look like he was in shape. And, like, it's weird, like, he's a real boxer. I've seen that, like, Tony Bellew's, like, a real boxer, like, a championship-level boxer in, like, real life. But it's just funny how we look at body types of box. Like, they don't all look like Michael B. Jordan.
I mean, most don't, actually.
Some do. Like, you know, you saw how Mike Tyson looked, and you saw how Holyfield looked, but then you see, like, you know, Michael, like, Riddick Bowe wasn't cut up.
Michael Moore wasn't exactly.
Michael Moore wasn't. That's not old George Foreman. Even, like, now, like, you see Tyson Fury is, like, this dude, like, he should be an ECW. Like, he's big, tall, with a gut, like, and he's knocking people out. Like, everybody doesn't look like a video game. And it's kind of like, that didn't bother me so much. But it's like, you used to see in movies where boxers look like boxers. So you see one that didn't look like, you know, he don't got an 8-pack and everything like that. And it's like, it's kind of like, is this guy really a fighter? And the fact that he's a real good fighter in real life was always funny to me. This guy he's fighting in this one definitely looks like a fighter.
Like a movie fighter. Yeah. On that note, we got to get out of here. I got to go. On that note, gang. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week with something. Oh yeah, I saw the mummy. I forgot to tell you. We can talk about that next week. Boy. And so yeah. So thanks for listening, Stunt Granny. We watch stuff on your social media platform and your podcast platforms. And yeah, I'm out of here.
For Jeremy Mays, I'm Shahida Dulhadi, and we are out.